Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to tonight's the first of three shiurim on one of my heroes, Rabbi Akiva. I want to thank everyone from REIT CJF for helping put this together. I see Menachem Lewin on the screen. Thank you, Menachem, for always being there, whatever we're doing. To thank Rabbi Yaakov Glasser, Rabbi Rob Shore, and the entire team that put together these wonderful lectures together. I do hope that we'll get good audio. It's not always so simple. We're all speaking to Verizon and asking them the same questions. So it's not so simple sometimes for the audio to work quite as well as the video. But I do hope. Please let me know. Someone, maybe Menachem, someone raise your hand if we're having a small problem. But I do hope that that will be good. Will be good for the evening. As I mentioned, Rabbi Akiva is truly, truly one of my heroes. His grave is actually a site that I go on pilgrimage when I go to Eretz Yisrael. I don't know how many of you have been to Rabbi Akiva's kever. It doesn't have the fanfare of many of the other kevarim in Eretz Yisrael. His kever is in Tveria with an absolutely stunning view of the Kinneret. He rests next to the Ramchal and to other Gedolim, but it's a little bit off the way. Today it's a little bit easier to find Rabbi Akiva's Kever. When I first went searching for him, you just had to do one of those Yashar, Yashar, Yashar. Wherever you went, you asked another Israeli, and they just said Yashar, Yashar. Eventually, before you drive off the cliff, hopefully, and end up in the Kinneret, you end up at his grave. Rabbi Akiva was an absolutely fascinating individual. And we have three opportunities to learn together. Sorry, we only have three. If you enjoy the shiurim, maybe we'll find another three, five, seven, no matter how many nights, no matter how many half hour, 45 minute periods we would spend together, you wouldn't run out of talking. You wouldn't run out of stories, interesting opinions, interesting sayings to talk about this man. What I'd like to do tonight is to look at his humble beginnings, at some of the stories about how he became Rabbi Akiva, which you are familiar with, but try actually to put them together, maybe in a way that you're not as familiar with, to try to look at different accounts of Rabbi Akiva's beginning, his marriage, the story with the stone, and to try to have the use this to understand Rabbi Akiva, and really, at this difficult time, to really understand ourselves. What do we know about Rabbi Akiva? So we know he was born before Churban Bayis Sheni. Rabbi Akiva did live at the time of the Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Akiva seemed to be frum, whatever that word will say. He seemed to be observant during the time of the Beis Hamikdash. People assume he was born around the year 50. Born around the year 50, which puts him at the age of about 18 or 20 at the time of the Churban. We know that he is the son of a ger, or an actual ger. Abarvanel's opinion is that he himself was actually a convert. But we know that he is at least the son of a convert. So we need to remember that Rabbi Akiva's journey starts way, not simply that he is one of the most famous Baalei Tshuva in our history, but he is himself a ger or the son of a ger. So his story, his propulsion into Yiddishkeit, is really quite a remarkable thing. We'll hopefully have a chance to look at some of Rabbi Akiva's impact at some point. But there's no doubt that Rabbi Akiva played a tremendous impact. He was probably one of the Tanaim who had the greatest impact on the rest of Jewish history. And if you had looked at him 50 or 60 years before, if you had looked at his family, they were not Jewish. They were not Jewish. And it is quite an amazing thing that Rabbi Akiva was able to play such a role in Jewish history. The famous wife, which we'll get to, was a second marriage. A second marriage. Rabbi Akiva was married to the daughter of Rabbi Yochanan ben Yeshua. He was married to the daughter of Rabbi Yochanan ben Yeshua, and he had a child from that marriage, at least one. And that seems to be Yehoshua ben Karcha. Yehoshua ben Karcha, what does the word kereach mean? Kereach means bald. Interesting. Some suggest that that was a nickname for Rabbi Akiva because he was particularly strikingly bald. We'll see if we can come back to that in one of our later shiurim. Why would it be important to know that this man was bald or what that means? But he seemed to have a son from the previous marriage. He eventually came to work as a shepherd for a very, very wealthy man named Ben Kalba Savua. Ben Kalba Savua, like a Kelev. The Gemara asks, why was his father-in-law's name the son of a dog? That's kind of a funny thing to say. Depending especially on how you say it. You wouldn't call your father-in-law the son of a dog. But the Gemara says that wasn't his real name, but it's because people came into his home as hungry as a dog, and they left savua. They left full. He was an incredibly wealthy man who was known for his hospitality, but as we'll see, had quite a few run-ins with his son-in-law until his son-in-law became the famous Rabbi Akiva. But how did it happen? How did this man who came from nowhere, how did he become this great individual? I'm going to share my screen with you to look at some Ma'ar Makomos. My apologies that I didn't send it out separately. I thought it was better just to do the sources here together. If the Hebrew seems a little bit scary, I will translate, I promise. The first famous source is in Avos the Rebbe Nosson. For those of you who are not familiar, there is another version, which is not printed in the regular Mishnayos. There's another version of Pirkei Avos. And this version of Rebbe Nosson, and it is more flowery. It has many more stories. It's a fascinating read. I'm a little surprised that it doesn't get more airtime. Many of the famous Rebbe Akiva stories, many of the famous Hillel stories, many of the stories that we know about some of the greats of the time are from this book. So let's read together the famous story, and we're going to ask some questions, of course, about it. Ma haya tchiloso shel Rabbi Akiva? Where did he come from? Where did this man come from? What is this about? Amru, they say, ben arba'im shana haya, velo shana klum. Velo shana klum. Now, the word shana is generally a reference to Torah Sheba'al Peh, Mishnah. There are various indications that he might have had a little background, but as we'll see, it doesn't look like very much. The man was 40 years old, living in the area of Yerushalayim at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, and he had no background. This seems to be more of an indication that perhaps he himself was a ger. His father was a ger, his father was driven to convert to Judaism, and yet he has absolutely no background living in Yerushalayim at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, for Lo Shankar, 40 years old. Pam achas haya omed al pi ha-be'er. Once he was standing next to a well or a source of water. Amar mi chakak even zu. He said, who made this indentation? How did we create this hole in what is otherwise the rock beneath him? Amrlo hamayim shetadir noflim alei b'chol yom. The water that's dripping and dripping and dripping and dripping, and we've seen this in various places, in natural parks, in Eretz Yisrael, how the constant dripping of water, the constant splashing of water over an incredibly long time can have incredible effects. Miyad hayar Rabbi Akiva dan kal v'chomer ba'atzmo. Rabbi Akiva immediately made a kal v'chomer. Very interesting. A kal v'chomer is a particularly Talmudic way of thinking, and it speaks to a very analytical mind that clearly hadn't been used for that. But he's dan kal v'chomer ba'atzma. It doesn't say he said to himself. It says he's dan kal v'chomer, which is very, very interesting. Marach pasalat hakasheh. You have something soft like water that can make an indentation into something hard like a rock. Divrei Torah, shekoshen kabarzel. Divrei Torah, which are as hard as metal. How did he know that? strange, someone lo shana klum. So this man who never ever sat in a Beis Medrash, strangely enough, is donning a kal v'chomer, and he says that the words of Torah are like barzel. He says, alachas kama v'chama shi'chakeku es libi shehu basar v'dam. They certainly can be engraved in my heart. Beautiful story. I'm sure at least one song. Probably A.B. Rottenberg, I think. There's at least a song with this. Okay, it's a very, very beautiful idea. Miyad chazar l'umot Torah. And immediately he went to study Torah. The story is amazing, but very, very hard to understand. Very, very hard to understand. Besides the fact that this man is speaking in a Talmudic language, this person, Velosha Naklum, the transformation of Rabbi Akiva over the course of an afternoon is something that's very, very difficult to understand. Seriously? Rabbi Akiva saw the thing dripping, and he said, I'm going to learn Torah. Now, what does it mean, Miyad Chazar L'Lomot Torah? Look at what the Avos Reb Nosson says. Halachu ubno v'yashvu eitzo malam de tinokos. He went with his son. This is seemingly Yoshua ben Karcha. And they went to a nursery teacher, to a cheder Rebbe. Amar le Rebbe, Lamdeini Torah. Rebbe, teach me Torah. Achaz Rabbi Akiva Barosh Haluach, Ubno Barosh Haluach. They were both holding up the blackboard, so to speak, in this makeshift school. Kosovlo Aleph Bet Vilamda. They mamish started from Aleph Bet. Rabbi Akiva had to learn Aleph Bet. This should be embarrassing for all of us who say we can't accomplish in Torah. Rabbi Akiva is coming at 40 years old, and he's literally learning the Aleph Beis. Aleph Tav, Vilamda. Toras Kohanim, Vilamda. That's an interesting next step. Toras Kohanim is a Medrash Halacha on the Psukim on the Torah. Probably we skipped a line there. It's not in the text, but he probably then learned the Chumash. And then he learned the rabbi's interpretation of the Chumash. It's interesting that if you learn Torat Kohanim, Torat Kohanim is the Medrash on Vayikra. Maybe this is a source for the custom that young children begin to first learn Sefer Vayikra as they jump into Chumash. Hayalomed v'holeich ad shalomad kol haTorah kula. And he kept doing it. He kept at it. He learned every day, and he learned kol haTorah kula. It's quite amazing. Quite amazing. But I want to focus on the inspiration, on the moment that Rabbi Akiva decides that he's going to study Torah. The man had never learned before. What he's committing to is to go to pre-1A. A grown man is committing to go to pre-1A. Why? Because he saw something. He saw water hitting a rock. It looks like there are huge gaps in this story. Not just the gap that it left out between Aleph Tav to Chumash, to Toras Kohanim, but huge gaps in terms of trying to understand what was this story. The plot thickens when one sees a Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim at the top of the screen, Tanya Amar Rabbi Akiva Kishayisi Am Haaretz. When I was a 35-year-old, Amarti Mi Yitain Li Talmud Chacham Va'an Ashchenu Kechamar. I would say, who could please find me a Talmud Chacham? I want to bite him. So you're talking about a man who not simply wasn't such a big Talmid Chacham, but you're talking about someone who seemed to hate Talmidei Chachamim. Amalei Talmid of Rebbe, Emor Kekelev. Very strange. The rabbis say, you know, donkeys aren't really known for biting. If you want to say, I want to bite him, so you bite like a dog. So he says, Rebbe, why would you say bite like a donkey? Amalei, he said, Zeh, the Chamor, no sheikh v'shover etzim. Because when a donkey bites your leg, it breaks through your leg. And the dog, it just bites you and it doesn't break the leg. When I was in Am Haaretz, when I was on the other side, I hated Talmidei Chacham. I hated him. How could it be that standing outside and watching the water drip is going to make this man come and turn to a life of Torah? Very, very strange. Now, let's just analyze for a moment this very interesting question of, you know, how far away was Rabbi Akiva when he first came? Lo shana klum, he hadn't learned anything. He had a hatred for Talmidei Chachamim. But it is interesting that the first time he meets the girl of his dreams, she sees something in him. The Gemara tells us in Kesubos, which brings the long story of he and his and the daughter of Ben Kalba Savur, which we'll get back to, Rabbi Akiva, Raya de Ben Kalba Savur Havi. Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd of this very wealthy man named Ben Kalba Savur. Chazise Barte, the owners, the rich man's daughter saw him, Dahavet Sania Umali. She saw that despite the fact that he was not learned, he was modest, and he had good midos of some. There was something about him that she noticed, and we'll get back to this. So that same guy who was Tzania Umali wanted to bite Talmidei Chachamim, not just bite them like a dog, but bite them like a donkey. So Tosfot in several places get into the action. Tosfos says, "Ikal emeimar dehasam lav mishum shahaya sonei Talmidei Chachamim." Very fascinating. It's not that Rabbi Akiva actually hated the Talmidei Chachamim. In fact, because he was an Am Haaretz, because he hadn't studied, he never really had much contact with Talmidei Chachamim. Right? Look at the phrase at the top line again: "Mi yitain li Talmud Chacham." If I would get my hands on one of them, what do you mean get my hands on one of them? Go to the Beis Medrash, I don't know. No, but he didn't have any contact with them. Says Tosfot, it doesn't mean Shahaya Sonei Talmidei Chachamim. It doesn't mean that he hated Talmidei Chachamim. He didn't even know what they were. Ela Mishum Shahaya Savur Shemitga'in Al Amei Haaretz Mipnei Torasan. Vehayu Talmidei Chachamim Sonim Otam. Who is the Otam? Rabbi Akiva came to believe that the Talmidei Chachamim hated him. They acted in a way that was arrogant. And I'm not even sure if they knew they were acting in a way that was arrogant, but somehow the way that they related to the Amei Haaretz was such, they dissed the Am Haaretz. They didn't give up their seat for the Am Haaretz. They didn't say Good Shabbos to the Am Haaretz. So the Am Haaretz assumed that the Talmidei Chachamim hated them. Figam, and he points out, interestingly, Tosfos, Mishum shelo hayu manichim osam ligabahem, because they had actually enacted a halacha. Doesn't quite say that the halacha was wrong, but that at a time where the Chachamim were trying to stay at a certain level of Tara, they wouldn't allow touch with an Am Haaretz. Every Chumrah brings along a kula. Tosfos don't say it was wrong, but every chumrah brings along a kula. Very often a chumrah creates a distance between members of a family, between members of a community. It doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do, but it has to be understood. Because they enacted certain stringencies to keep themselves away from the Amei Haaretz assumed that they were hated. And that brought about such a hatred in the opposite direction that Rabbi Akiva said, I would like to bite one of them. Tosa Seyav Amikol Malkom Shomer Mitzvot Haya. Doesn't exactly bring a source. Rabbeinu Tam, that's not a source. Doesn't say where Rabbeinu Tam knew this. He is commenting on this Gemara. Chazise Barte Tahave Tzania Umali. Tosa say it's unlikely that if he was really not Shomer Mitzvos, then would she really have been able to see? It's not so clear from the Gemara. The attributes in the Gemara of Tzania Umali, maybe that's something that she saw even without Shmiras HaMitzvos. But Tosfos don't entertain the fact that a ger or the son of a ger living in Yerushalayim at the time of the Mikdash wasn't Shomer Mitzvot. This concept, just to take an aside for a moment, is a beautiful idea that's expressed in a famous Tosfot in Pesachim. The Gemara in the last parak of Pesachim says that there are certain people who one is allowed to hate. One is allowed to hate. If a person is a public sinner, one is allowed to be upset at them for that. One is allowed, in fact, to hate them. It says HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates them. Tosfot quote, however, there's a Gemara in Baba Metzia, in Elu Metzios. Ohev lifrok visonei liton mitzvah besonei, kedei lakuf et yitzro. It's a little more complicated than this, but the Gemara brings an example where there are, let's say, two cars broken down on the side of the road. One of them is your best friend, and the other is the guy that you like the least in the whole neighborhood. Which one should you help? So the Gemara says you should help the one that you don't like to work on yourself. Builds character. Builds good midos if you help that guy. V'hashta, says Tosfos, makvias yetzer shayach, kevin de mitzvah lisnoso. Wait a minute. You have a mitzvah, you're allowed to, and you're supposed to hate him because this person hates God. He hates your father. So you're supposed to hate the guy that hates your father. And yet you're supposed to help him out? Why would that be? What does that mean? V'yesh lomar kevan shehu sono gam chaveiro sone oto. It's okay deep down in the heart, and we have to be careful how we use this. We're not such big tzaddikim ourselves. But theoretically, it's okay to hate the person that, so to speak, hates the Ribono Shel Olam. But you can't show him that. Because once you show him that, then he'll hate you. And once he hates you, Dichsiv kemayim hapanim lapanim kein lev ha'adam la'adam, a famous pasuk from Mishlei. Like the face reflects in water, so too your heart and your actions and your face is reflected on the person in front of you. Ubayin mitoch kach l'sina gemura. Sina gemura. It's one thing to have in the bottom of your heart. Most of us are not such big tzaddikim. We resent people. We have a lot of people we don't like, but not because we're so concerned about how it affects HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But even if we would be, l'shem shemayim, and say, I want to love you, but you don't seem to love the Ribono Shel Olam. Once I show that dislike, then I bring about from him in return a dislike, and then you get to Sina Gemura. Then you get to wanting to bite somebody's leg. It is so fascinating that Rabbi Akiva hates the Chachamim so much just because he thinks that they hate him. It doesn't say the Chachamim wanted to break his leg. They probably didn't even mean so much. But that's the sinner that can be brought up in somebody if we show them that we don't like them. If we create the impression we don't like them, we're going to bring a sinner to the world that's much greater than any sinner that we had in the first place. Any sinner that's allowed has to be deep in our hearts. Something else. So let's get back to Rabbi Akiva himself. Just that was too juicy to leave and too important for us to understand. You have a man here who comes from absolutely nothing. He actually seems to want to bite Talmidei Chacham. He knows so little about the Torah world. He only knows it from afar. He thinks they all hate him. One day he's taken a walk. He sees a sign. And he decides he's going to give up his life and go and study Torah, even though it means starting with the Aleph Beis. Story doesn't really make a lot of sense. How could that be? There's another story that we are much more familiar with. And the question is how and if the stories go together. Rabbi Akiva, let's read again. We read just the first line. Rabbi Akiva, Raya de Ben Kalba Savuave. There's another very famous story. You've heard both of these stories, but never necessarily put them together. Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd of Ben Kalba Savua. Chazise Barte da Havitzni Umali, and his daughter took a liking to him, not because he was good looking. It seems that, I don't know if his baldness was apparent then. I guess it was already. His son already was called the son of the baldy. Not that bald fellows can't be good looking. I'm not making any comments, especially now that those who have hair can't do anything to cut it. So not going to make much of that right now. But she takes a liking to his midos. She sees something very special in this man. Amrle, she said to him, "I mekadshon alach azlas lebeirav." It's unbelievable. She says, "If I become betrothed to you, would you go and study in the Beis Medrash?" Amr La in. He says, yeah, I would do that. Ikad Shalei Bitsina Vishadarte. They got married in private, and that was it. She sent him away to be in yeshiva. Now, this story, too, seems to have some tremendous gaps. Is it that she'd been observing him for some time, and then he came over to her in the field and saw her for the first time? That moment, she said, you know, if you're willing to give up your whole life and go to yeshiva now, I'll marry you. The likelihood is there's much more to this story. They must have had some sort of a relationship. They must have spent time together. She must have really understood that this shepherd, who was an ignoramus, who had a reputation for hating Tamini Chachamim, was a diamond in the rough. At a certain point, she says to him, if I get betrothed to you, I'll marry you, but you got to go to yeshiva. And he says, okay, I'll go to the yeshiva. Was it her or was it the rack? Two contradictory stories. Yeah, one's in the Talmud Bavli, one's in Avos Reb Nosson. What happened here? She comes to him and she says, marry me, I'll marry you if you go to yeshiva. And he says, yes. And then they proceed. What's going on? So the Gemara says in the Nedarim elsewhere has more information about this particular story. Rabbi Akiva iskadish labarte de bar kalba savua. That Rabbi Akiva got engaged, got betrothed to the daughter of bar kalba savua. Same characters, Gemara and Nedarim instead of Ksubas. Shama bar kalba savua adra hano mikol nichse. When bar kalba savua heard that she got betrothed to this nobody, this lowlife, this shepherd, he declared that all of his wealth will not go. She will not have any benefit from his wealth anymore. Ozla v'isnasivale besitua. They get married in a barn. What the Gemara in Ksuba says was betzina. Haviganu beitivna. And they were sleeping on the straw. This is the daughter of probably the wealthiest man in Yerushalayim. Havikamankit lativna min mazaya. And he would pick out the straw from her hair when she'd wake up in the morning. Amr la. He said to her, Ihavili raminalich Yerushalayim dedava. He said, if it was up to me, if I could, I would get you a Yerushalayim, a Jerusalem of gold. This is the origin of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, we know from the Mishnayos in Shabbos, was a very particular pin that women used to wear at the time. It was a particular piece of jewelry. It was considered to be the nicest thing that you'd have, probably some sort of depiction of Jerusalem in gold that women would wear. Rabbi Akiva feels terrible. He feels terrible that he can't provide her. A husband is supposed to, if he can, be able to take care of his wife the way that she was used to being. This is the wealthiest girl. He has absolutely nothing. Now he doesn't even have a job. So she says to him, Amr le zil havi beiraf. I don't need the jewelry. Go learn. Beautiful story. What was the timing between the first story in Ksubos and the second story in the Nedarim? What's the difference there? How long was that gap? When they made up in the field that Rabbi Akiva was going to go study in exchange for marriage, she would marry him, but Rabbi Akiva had to go study. Was that supposed to be before the marriage? Was that supposed to be Shana Rishona? We see that they're sort of hanging out in the barn. Maybe they just began the marriage. The goal wasn't that they wouldn't spend any time together. That would be strange. But we see there's sort of this delay. Rabbi Akiva still thinks that what his wife wants is to live the life that she had in her father's home. And she's telling him, all I want is for you to go to yeshiva. There seemed to be an internal struggle, the sacrifice that Rabbi Akiva would have to make in order to leave everything even if you didn't have a job at the time, but to be able to go back to Olive Base, what's going on? I believe that the proper way of understanding these stories is to put them together. And it's not simply that there are two traditions of what happened to Rabbi Akiva and how he got his start, but it was the confluence of these two factors that led Rabbi Akiva to go to yeshiva. When Rabbi Akiva is standing, the famous story of Rabbi Akiva standing in front of the well, Rabbi Akiva seeing the water pound away at the rock, he takes that as a sign from Hashem. It's a moment of his mind suddenly being opened. But we all know, Rabosai, that we're only going to see the signs along the road if we're wearing the proper glasses and if we're looking in the right places. The fact that water is pounding on a rock does not mean that a person should change their entire life and go to yeshiva. Rabbi Akiva's perception, Rabbi Akiva's understanding of what happened was because his wife had led him to the point that he was in this moment of indecision. He couldn't figure out exactly what to do at that moment. His wife was telling him to go to yeshiva. We learned the story before that Rabbi Akiva here said, in. Right? She said, I'll marry you if you go to yeshiva. Amar la in. And he said, yes. How do we envision that story? Did he say yes right away? Did he hesitate and said yes? Did he tell her he'd have to get back to her? We're given a very terse story in the Gemara. We don't know. We do know that even after they're married, they're functioning on slightly different levels. Rabbi Akiva is saying, if I had the money, I would buy you a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. In other words, beginning to wonder, am I really going to do this? This doesn't make any sense. She said, go to the Beis Medrash, go to the Beis Medrash. Does he go immediately to the Beis Medrash? I would suggest the answer is no. Rabbi Akiva has this long relationship with his wife where they're trying to decide exactly what to do, and he can't figure out, where is she coming from? I don't have the potential to do this. What does she see in me that I don't see in myself? Why does she think I could become a Talmid Chacham? How could I change at the age of 40 or 45 at the time? Rabbi Akiva is now standing at the well, and he's stopping and he's looking, and he sees the water banging into the rock. And he now understands that's a siman, that's a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, we all have life-changing experiences, Rabosai. There are moments where something comes and we come to a certain realization, but it's only because we're primed to have our eyes open. Sometimes we walk around with our eyes open. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu, when there's so many connections of Moshe and Rabbi Akiva, that Moshe Rabbeinu turned to the sneh and HaKadosh Baruch Hu began to speak to him. And many of the Mefarshim point out that it was the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu turned to the sneh. Many people walk past that sneh. But Rabbi Akiva, but Moshe Rabbeinu stopped and looked to the sneh for inspiration. He tried to understand. He turned aside. And that's what allowed him to hear the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What primed Rabbi Akiva for that moment of the dripping in the rock? The relationship that he had with his wife. The nudging, the encouragement that he had with his wife. We don't simply see signs. We only see them if we're looking for them and if the people in our life tell us to look for them. We have to understand, Rabosai, that success is a combination of our hishtadlus and the stepping in of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Very often, one can imagine one could be a Bas Kalba Savua. One could be the wife of Rabbi Akiva. And imagine that there's no way I'll be able to accomplish this. I'll never get this guy to go to yeshiva. It's worthless. It's ridiculous. Her job actually wasn't to get him to go to yeshiva. Her job was to put the idea in his head. Her job was to build him up to the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take it for there. And that's really our job in trying to influence the people in our lives and our children, if we're zochah to have children and grandchildren. Not necessarily to have them succeed. It's going to be their decision. And there's so many factors out of our control. But to put them in a place where they should be able to succeed. There's a fascinating halacha by Neiris Chanukah. And Chanukah is so much about the children, and so light is so much about Torah, that we know that the mitzvah on Chanukah is to light the candle in such a way that it can continue to burn. To light the candle in such a way, if I light a candle with only 5 minutes of oil there, then I'm not yotzei the mitzvah. If I light the candle with 2 hours of oil and it happens to go out and I'm not around, so the halacha is kovsa ein zakuklo. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos not so long ago in Daf Yomi that if it goes out, ultimately I'm not responsible for that because I can't bring things to their conclusion. What I can do is set something up in a way that it could succeed and then wait for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to step in. And that's exactly what this woman of tremendous insight and tremendous emunah does, putting Rabbi Akiva in that situation. That's the first thing. The second fascinating thing that I want to point out is that just one more thought and we'll close with that. This section. There is a beautiful, beautiful idea. I think about this all the time. The Kutzke Rebbe has a famous idea. He says that the pasuk tells us by Kriyashma that these things should be al levavecha. Al levavecha. That you should take the Torah and you should put the Torah, the words of the Torah, on your heart. So the Kutzke said, what's the point of putting things on your heart? You're supposed to put them in your heart. What does it mean to put them on your heart? So the Kutzke said that our hearts are not necessarily always open. The normal state, and I say this when I teach my smicha students, the normal state of an adult is that their hearts are not always open. You know, I started my rabbinic career in NCSY dealing with kids who were like soaking up words. I'll go here, I'll go there. Children are willing to make big changes all the time. Adults, Baruch Hashem, don't live in that place their whole life. The goal of an adult is to keep putting Torah on their heart. A moment comes along where one's heart opens and all of that Torah can fall in. We can't finish. We can't necessarily bring our religious development to the fullest. Sometimes our hearts are just closed. Sometimes it's so difficult. Sometimes we're too busy. But what we can do is we could prime ourselves and prime the people around us for that moment of inspiration. And that's exactly what she did for Rabbi Akiva. The second quick thing I want to point out as we go back to our story is that the Maseches in Avos de Reb Nosson, it points out that halachu ubanav v'yoshvu eitzel melamdei tinokos. It's fascinating that this man who would change Jewish history and change learning of Torah for the rest of time, this man went with his son. And although it doesn't exactly explain in any of the sources what the son's role was here, we have to consider the possibility that the son was actually part of this deal, and the son was actually part of the way that he came to Torah. How many Baalei Tshuva today came to Torah because their children came to it first? How many people became interested in Torah because even though for themselves they weren't so interested, they wanted to make sure that at least their son could learn? I think it's absolutely a fascinating part of this story that Rabbi Akiva specifically goes with his son, who becomes Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha, probably if this is the same son, who becomes Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha, the special relationship between Rabbi Akiva and his son without the first wife there anymore, and how that may have been a part of the story of Jewish history as well. Let's look at just one or two more things from this fascinating set of stories. Ozel Tarte Srei Shnin Kame de Rebbe Eliezer Rebbe Yeshua. Next very famous part of the story. This will be much more brief, but it is absolutely fascinating. He went for 12 years and he learned Rabbi Akiva in front of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. How does that jive with the original story from Avos de Reb Nosson, where Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua had a yeshiva that started with Cheder and went all the way up to two of the greatest Talmidei Chacham in our history? Was that another 12 years? Doesn't sound like the time the learning Aleph Beis was necessarily part of that era. Lemishlam Tartis Reishnin Ka'osu Lebeisei. Famous story. At the end of 12 years, he comes back to his home. Shama Minachori Beisei de Ka'amar Lachad Rasha. He gets close to his home and he hears a wicked person saying to his wife, Shapir Ovid Lech Avuch. Your father was right. He knew this guy was a low life. He knew this guy had no potential. Your father's a great man. Your father's a big Baal Chesed. Your father was right. Chada de Lodomilach. It's not right for you. Va'od Shivkech Armelus Chayus. Armelus Chayus. You're a living widow. You're a living widow. Kul and Shnin all of these years. Amalei, she says to him, Eat sois ledili, if he would listen to me, lahave tartis reishnin achrinasa. He would go for another 12 years. Amar hol v'yaftali reshusa, ehadel achori. He says, because she has given me the right to do so, I will turn around here. Hadar ozol have tartis reishnin achrinasa. Story is amazing on many, many levels. He turns around, he goes back to yeshiva for another 12 years. Many people ask, why didn't Rabbi Akiva at least come home and give her a kiss? He was that close. He walked, he was all the way at yeshiva. He came back to see her. He was so close to his home. He overheard that she said he should come back. He should stay another 12 years. And he says, I'm going to do that. That's what I'm going to do. So one famous interpretation, which I think has a lot of truth to it, points to all of the commitments that we make, but then don't act upon right away. All of the moments of inspiration that we have that somehow don't make it to the finish line. There's a tremendous amount of truth in that. That Rabbi Akiva understood that if he came home and spent the night, not so clear if he would have gone back to yeshiva, and not so clear that he would have become Rabbi Akiva. It's a very powerful message to us that when we have an opportunity, when we have a moment, we need to seize upon it right then, because who knows if we'll get another chance. I once heard a famous story of told by a woman who was involved in the Kiruv, and she used to live in Florida. Eventually, she made Aliyah. Many years after she left Florida, she had someone come knock on her door, and it was a boy who she kind of knew from the community. And he was there with a backpack on his shoulders. And he says, I have to tell you a story. She says, okay, come sit down. He said that when he was in college, he was out surfing. And surfing was his entire life in college. And he only felt like a person when he was out there on the water. One day he was out there alone. He specifically liked to be there out alone. And a very big wave hit him, and he went underwater. And he doesn't know how long he was underwater and exactly what happened. At a certain point, he didn't know how much longer he could make it out there. And he started talking to God. He didn't have such a relationship with God. But he started talking to God. And he said, you know, there's this woman, and she's been saying I should go to yeshiva. He goes, if you get me out of this, I'll go to yeshiva. So she looks at him. She can't believe she had that kind of influence on him. But she says to him, you were in college like 7-8 years ago. He goes, yeah, you know what happened? I was there, I was out, I was drowning in the water. And as soon as I said this, I said, God, if you save me, I'm going to go to yeshiva. And just that moment, I felt a rope hit me in the back of the head. And I said, when I get a chance. I'll go to yeshiva when I get a chance. He says, it took me 7 years now of my life. I wasted the last 7 years because now's the first time I got a chance. And I'm glad I got the chance. But I could have easily missed that moment of inspiration. Rabbi Akiva understood that if he walked into the home, if he didn't seize at that moment, it may never be back. But I think there's a simpler explanation. Because if we understand the story the way we've understood it till now, that there was a confluence of events, his wife's desire for him to learn, his wife's belief in him, and what? And a siman from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The combination of his wife's desire and a siman from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he stood there at the door, Rabbi Akiva understood this wasn't just his wife talking. This was the way his wife functioned. This is the partnership that his wife had with the Ribono Shel Olam. She began the process. She expressed the love. She expressed the admiration. She saw in him something. But then there's going to be a siman. It was one fine day when they were married, when they were newly married, and they maybe even had a fight about whether he should go to the yeshiva or not, that he walked out and he saw the dripping water in the rock. And now he had heard not the voice of his wife, but a bas kol effectively. He heard there was another siman. There was another signpost that combined his wife's belief in him and a divine sign that it was exactly at that moment. There's one other thing that is so fascinating about the story as we're almost to conclude. The Talmud Yerushalmi in Maseches Pesachim says the following. Shlosh esrei shana asa Rabbi Akiva. Nichnas etzel Reb Lezer v'lohaya yodea bo. For 13 years, Rabbi Akiva sat at the foot of Reb Lezer. That's how he's called in the Jerusalem Talmud. Not Rabbi Eliezer, Reb Lezer. Maybe they spoke Yiddish in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Reb Lezer. For 13 years, he sat by Reb Lezer. Reb Lezer had no idea who he was. In other words, he was by far not a star in the yeshiva. I think it's absolutely fascinating if you look at the numbers in these two stories. Rabbi Akiva comes back home, assuming that we're dealing with the same story. But the fascinating possibility that Rabbi Akiva comes home after 12 years. He's been learning in yeshiva 12 years. The Rosh Yeshiva doesn't know who he is yet. You'll tell me because it was the Mir and they had 5,000 students. It was YU and they had 1,300 students. They didn't have 1,300 students. And even when we learn stories about Rabbi Akiva's students, we know that these numbers are not meant literally. What does it mean that Rabbi Lazer didn't know him? For how long? For 13 years. Which means that when Rabbi Akiva came back, and through this combination of his wife's encouragement and the siman from Hashem, he goes back even though he hasn't truly been successful yet. It was only a year later that the Rosh Yeshiva would finally get to know his name. It wasn't that Rabbi Akiva was so successful at the time. He came back and he understood that my time in yeshiva is worthwhile. Rabbi Akiva came back home after 12 years of toiling away and the Rosh Yeshiva still didn't know his name. But she believed in him. She believed in him. And she believed that even if the first 12 years didn't do it, that the next 12 years would be when he succeeded. And that, the combination, the coming together of that belief in him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving a siman, HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving that little bit of push, that's what brings Rabbi Akiva to his place of prominence. Asa be'esrin v'arba alfin zugei talmidei. 12 years later, he comes back with 24,000 pairs of Talmidim. Whatever this means, match has been made of this. Were they soldiers? Were they Talmidim? Were they part of the merit of Bar Kochba? But obviously, it was those 12 years. It was that second stint in yeshiva that he goes from being a no-name in the yeshiva to being himself the Rosh Yeshiva. Nafik kuli amaliape, and everybody goes out to greet him. Va'af hi kamt lemefak laape, and she too comes out to greet him. Amar la hahu rishia, va'at lahecha. The Rasha says, and what about you? He left you behind. He doesn't care about you anymore, you see? Your father was right. Amar le yodea tzadik nefesh behemta. She quotes a pasuk, an enigmatic pasuk. The tzaddik knows who I am. The tzaddik knows this is an inside. We have a relationship that goes in a very, very deep way, like a person with his closest things, like a person who knows his animal. She's being very, very modest. But she's saying he knows me. He understands. Asas le'ischazuyele. She goes up to try to see him. Kamadchen le'rabbanon, and the rabbis, seemingly not knowing who she was. Let's assume that they didn't know who she was. They're trying to stop her. What's this woman coming through? Amr lahan hanichula. Leave her alone. Let her come close. Shali v'shalachem shalahu. That which I have, that which you have, the Torah that I have, the Torah that you have, and what Rabbi Akiva left out was the Torah that we have. There is no one who played a greater role in the shaping of the Masorah and the reviving of the Jewish spirit after the time of the Churban than Rabbi Akiva. Shelo, that of Rabbi Akiva, v'shelanu, the fact that we are here today, shelohi, is because of this woman. It's because of the impact that she made. Because she believed in Rabbi Akiva. And she trusted that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would do the rest. We would not be here, arguably, if it wasn't for this great Jewish woman. Next week, we'll begin to see Rabbi Akiva not as a younger fellow, not as a growing Talmud Chacham, but we'll begin to understand, we'll begin to try to struggle and understand the tremendous role that Rabbi Akiva played in Jewish history of the time and how those lessons are so important to us till today. I thank everybody for listening. I wish you all a good Shabbos. Don't forget to count Sfira tonight. Let me look at the chat for just a moment. Where can you get a recording? Anyone would like a recording, I assume the recording will be up on YU Torah each week. The recordings of all of these shiurim, I encourage you, there are 8 shiurim a week, Monday through Thursday, 12 o'clock and 8 o'clock. And I look forward to seeing you all next week. Shabbat Shalom.